Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? High Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
God damn it. Fantastic guest today. Olayemi Olorin is on the show. YouTube host.
Mm-hmm.
Illuminati is her show on YouTube. It's great. I've been on it. She's going to be here joining us. She's a movement lawyer, defense attorney, to talk about the Cassie and Diddy situation.
I'm excited to hear her perspective.
So amazing. So amazing. Pleasantries are going to be a little shorter this time because there is a shit ton of news.
Is there?
There's a lot. There's a lot going on. You don't know. You don't know what's happening right now.
I definitely know what's happening right now. Yeah. I thought we have a few big topics.
Big topics.
Right? Not a whole lot of topics, but like big issues to get into.
Big topics. Big issues.
Do you feel the Baton Rouge spirit for me since I was...
You went there.
Since I was there this weekend?
You went to an LSU game.
Where are you from? What's the area? Where are you
Gardere.
Oh.
So the stadium is here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's off Nicholson Drive.
Mm-hmm.
If you to go on Nicholson Drive, right, the big street. So the stadium's here and there's that big street. And across the street, there's like the baseball stadium and all of that stuff. That's Nicholson Drive. If you to go south down Nicholson Drive, probably with no traffic for about 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, that's far.
Yeah.
For Baton Rouge, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's not that big. Probably not 20 minutes. I'd say 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
10, 15 minutes from Nicholson Drive all the way down that you would get to Gardere Lane. You make a left. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
Yeah. And then also, well, I'm from two places. I'm from Gardere Lane, and I'm also from South Baton Rouge, the bottom.
The bottoms. I saw those.
The bottom. That's right around the corner
from
the stadium.
They went to a club over there.
Who went to a club over there?
I didn't go.
Who went?
Justin and
them.
Oh,
they went to Splash.
They went to Splash.
They went to, it's a gay club over there.
Yeah, they went to Splash.
Splash, let me say this. Splash is not necessarily in the bottom.
It's y'all have the bottom and y'all have Fruit Town because they couldn't decide which one to go to.
Fruit Town. Yeah, you got bottom, you got Fruit Town. Splash is off Nicholson as well. Oh, no, it's off Highland. Splash is off Highland. So you go over there, you go to Splash, but no one would say that Splash is in the bottom.
I just saw
it's
the map
adjacent to
that
bottom.
They were showing me. I was like, oh, okay, how was Splash last night? It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun. I went with the Raising Cane's folks.
Yeah, you liked it.
And, I mean, it was Georgia State. Not really a competitive game, but just like...
They were scoring, though.
Experience. Yeah,
sucks.
Yeah, they scored quickly for a second. Yeah, that first half, we were like, what's happening there?
Whoa, Tigers!
But it's just, I love football and college football at that, and it's just fun to see the tailgating experience, and we walked. Actually, we did not walk to the stadium. We ended up driving, but we walked around, saw the campus.
It's great.
Yeah,
what did you think about the tailgating experience in Baton Rouge?
So it was smaller. I've been before because
Okay.
Remember I told you I dated that guy from Zachary. So I've been to the tailgating experience.
Oh yeah, but Georgia State, not as many people came.
Not nearly as many people. It was good. In and out, super quick. Yeah. Went to Rufino's.
Oh yeah, Rufino's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had. What,
went to Fred's with the kids party.
I went to Fred. How come, man? Joy told me. Shout out Joy Taylor because Joy went to Baton Rouge. How are they getting y'all to go to Fred's? How do they get Joy?
So, Joy went to, I'm gonna text Joy about Fred's. So I went to Fred's twice.
Joy, y'all are fucking nuts. Joy goes to Baton Rouge. Joy's nephew plays for LSU.
Right, right, Mason.
Joy goes to Baton Rouge and she goes to the game and she goes, Van, how come you didn't tell me about Fred's? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in Fred's?
Well, who was there? Who was performing?
I'm not sure who was performing.
Because the week before, Shaq DJ.
Shaq DJ's at Fred's a couple of times. Yeah, Shaq okay. Be there.
Time we saw Flage rap.
Oh, okay. Nice.
She rapped.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Right.
She's very good.
This is my thing. I'm not saying that Fred's is whack. I'm just saying that Fred's is for the children.
Well, we were in a section.
Okay.
The oldest people. I mean, it's like me and, you know, Miss Graves and all her friends and me and Justin and all his
and you guys
friends.
In Thailand at fucking
but then, but here's
Fred's.
The thing.
I love it.
So the first night it was Fred's and that's when Flage performed.
Uh-huh.
So that was cool. And we stayed in the section. But the next day we ventured off. It was Parrish County Line. It was like a live country cover band that was performing, which actually was really good. I was like, oh, I don't know how this
was at Fred's?
It was at Fred's. It was really good. But then... I was like, I want to go see what's outside of it because I didn't get to see it the first night. So we walk through the crowd and then you go outside And I was like, is that Sexy Red playing? It's a whole, it's a club.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's the live stage.
Yeah.
Then there's, but I didn't see
so
that
Friends
the first
is expanded.
Night.
Cause when we were going to Friends, it wasn't the two sides. Friends is expanded.
Oh yeah. So there's a stage and there's a tent, and that's where we're the first night. And that's where there's the performance. Then we ventured out to the club. And we just stayed till it closed at Fred's. It was a good time. We were with Fred, whose name is not Fred.
Yeah. hanging out with him.
It was a lot of fun.
It's great.
With the college kids, I felt young.
You like to get out there. Hey, it's me, Auntie Rachel. Are you auntie yet or are you cousin? Are you Auntie Rachel or are you cousin?
I think I'm
Rachel?
Auntie. I think I'm auntie.
I think you might be cousin.
They thought I was in my 20s, but I felt like auntie.
Yeah.
Does
Fred still have that little guy outside that shows you how you shouldn't dress? Little black guy.
He came in through the backside.
Wow. So outside,
I think that's saying a lot.
So outside of Fred's, there used to be, and I'm, you know, I won't be visiting Fred's next week, so I don't give a fuck. But outside of Fred's, there used to be this little picture. And the picture was of how you shouldn't dress to get inside of Fred's.
And what did it look like?
It was a guy. And he had a backwards cap on, and he had a white T-shirt on, and he had a chain on, and he had baggy pants on. I can't remember whether or not the little cartoon was black or not.
I hope not.
But hold on. Let me call
Ryan. It already implies enough. But let me just tell you, there were people dressed just like that inside.
It's probably changed now. This was.
I mean, they were playing straight Sexy Red in there.
No. I'm not saying. They always. Friends is always a place that we went. But we used to kind of, you know, we used to be like a little bit in protest with Fred's as well. Let me call Gino real quick and see if Gino remembers. Gino.
Please leave your message.
Damn. All right, anyway, fuck it. Who cares? I'm not sure whether or not the little guy was black or not, but obviously he was meant to.
But it was implied.
Represent.
We don't play no boogie woogie.
Whatever, man. It's just Spatton Rouge. All right. Lots of news. I'm glad you got to enjoy Baton Rouge.
I did.
Okay. I'm feeling a little wonky. I went up on my Manjaro.
Oh, I didn't know you were still doing it.
Still doing it. Still dropping the LBs. I went up on the Manjaro, so it's a little wonky right now. Who knows if I'll have to run out of here. Shout out to everybody on...
It makes you sick.
It
runs through you.
Yeah, daddy. Yeah. Obviously, you guys know what the big deal of the day is. It's on the other side of this break. It is Cassie and Diddy with the guests.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear. That is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
You guys, lots to unpack from this weekend, this past week, the story of Diddy and Cassie and Diddy. everyone knows now, there was a bombshell lawsuit filed by Cassie that alleged all kinds of terrible things. Things from sex trafficking to forcible rape to being plied with drugs to physical abuse. A whole litany of terrible, terrible things Cassie alleged in a lawsuit that I think was filed on Thursday. Okay. Just after we had recorded here on Higher Learning, which is why we didn't have it in the show for Friday. I think most people woke up Friday, or depending on what time you get up, or Friday, were super surprised to see that that lawsuit, which had been filed on Thursday, was already settled. Less than 24 hours after it was made public, it was settled. Now, just so everybody knows, the allegations that were inside of the lawsuit, there was also an allegation that Cassie was trying to shake Diddy down for money, which Cassie's people came back and said, hey, that's not the case. We had actually been offered money by him not to go forward with the lawsuit, which apparently they couldn't come to a number. She filed the lawsuit. It was then settled. Okay, a lot to unpack here. And to help us do it is another legal eagle. You know, of course, Rachel is a legal eagle. We got two lawyers right here and a nigga. That could be the name of our podcast. Two lawyers and a nigga. Olami Olorin is joining us today. She is so fucking smart. Okay, like, you're just ridiculously smart. If you're not watching her on YouTube, you need to be watching her. I've been on the channel.
Yes.
Illuminati. I've been on there. I've also watched her Eric Adams doc, which you're going to get kicked out of New York. But she is a movement lawyer. She's an activist. She's an amazing host. And she's on the show with us today. I guess my first question to you, thank you for joining us on Higher Learning. My first question is, obviously, when this comes out, a lot of people go, hey, this is a settlement. If you really wanted justice. Oh, by the way, I should say this before we get into this. Ola did an amazing, amazing talk with Mark Lamont Hill. And I really want everybody to go subscribe and listen to what Mark Lamont Hill is doing on YouTube. It is fantastic right now. He's just getting started, but he's already hit his stride. I saw her on that, and I wanted to have her on Higher Learning, but I'm encouraging everyone to go listen to her conversation with Mark on YouTube as well. All right. A lot of people, when they heard about this settlement, they go, hey, this isn't justice. This is money. You've been very strong in criticizing that purview. Why is it so important for people to understand the difference between a civil suit and the difference between legal charges?
I think there's so much to unpack there, right? Because even if we were talking about the criminal law, even if this was a conversation about the criminal law, I would want to push back on what the idea of justice is.
Okay.
And why only in these kinds of instances, when there is a woman claiming abuse, does suddenly the Black community believe justice is tantamount to the criminal system? Because we don't believe that no other time of the year. So that's the first thing. But then second, this is a civil suit. Any civil lawsuit that is filed, what you are looking for is monetary damages. That is what a civil suit is. And I also think it's interesting that we don't say that in any other regard. Anytime if somebody is killed by the police, their family sue. We don't say that it's any less serious or their family doesn't want justice because they sued for money, right? When OJ is when the woman who OJ was acquitted of killing, when her family turned around and sued OJ, we did not say, oh, they don't want justice. Why are they pursuing those charges? When you get in a car accident, you have an accident and then you go and sue. Nobody says, oh, you don't want justice. So why is it that suddenly when it comes to a woman being abused, suddenly we say, oh, you're just looking for money? And I also think it's interesting on the heels of the Meg Thee Stallion stuff, who did pursue criminal charges and not civil charges. And there we said, oh, you're trying to throw a Black man in jail, right? I think we've seen three different situations play out in recent discourse that show that this is just us moving the goalposts, right? Because we had the Sukiana situation when all she wanted is an apology. And we said on social media, and they said, oh, you're trying to ruin him. Why are you trying to ruin him? This is a young brother. Why are you doing this in the court of public opinion? We had the Meg Thee Stallion pursue it criminally. And we said, why are you trying to throw a Black man in jail? And now you see Cassie try to do something privately. Originally, they say it's a shakedown. Then she goes and files a civil lawsuit immediately. And what a civil lawsuit does is when you file a civil lawsuit, you're saying, I'm alleging that you did something to me and that I can go to trial and prove that, and you will have to pay me monetary damages. So if somebody files a civil lawsuit accusing you of all these heinous things, a party, by the way, that has more money, more resources, and more ability to fight that case in the court, decides the immediately the next day, instead of us going to court and having the depositions and the hearings and the public records, I am going to give you the money now. That is the outcome you would be getting in a civil suit. So where is the justice? Unless we believe that justice is having her put her business and her trauma for all of our disposal to pick apart and determine what we think and have a court mirror back the sentiments of what she's already experienced. So that's my answer there.
Mm. Oh, I thought you should follow
up. One follow up. I get it. I think what people would say was, and all of these are allegations. Everyone should know all of these are allegations. I think what people, and I just would ask you this to see how you feel about it. What people would say was what they really want is some sort of clarity on whether or not Puff is the guy that the suit alleges him to be.
And do you believe it?
What happened?
Would the people who want that clarity, who say they need that clarity from the lawsuit, would they believe that?
The question I'm asking you is there any way that through deposition or through trial that that would be made more clear?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, okay. First of all, a jury, like say this goes to civil court and you have a jury, it's going to be a handful of the same people that's in our larger society making their determinations, right? Determining mm-hmm. whether or not they believe what Cassie's saying or they believe what Diddy is saying didn't happen. That's ultimately the same concept of what we have now, right? And I don't believe that it's going to make that any clearer to the public, because the same people who are going to say that they don't believe it now, that she's just saying it or that she has nefarious or ulterior motives, are going to say it then. Because again, we always have this same. We had the same song and dance with Meg, right, for 2 years. And they said, wait till trial. We're going to see what the court say. And the court said, yeah, guilty on all charges.
And they said, fuck it, we don't free to her anyway.
It's a setup. He was framed. It was just goalpost shifting.
But if they did have go forward, if they didn't settle and they had depositions, or even if it did go to trial, there would be more details that would come out. There would be testimony that would come out, which, to your point, it would matter, because the people who are seeking for clarity based off of the information we have so far are people who just don't want to accept what the details that are in the suit, or they already have their mind made up. But a lot of people are talking about the quickness of the settlement. What does that say to you, that this settlement happened so quickly, in your experience? What do you think that says?
I don't know a single other lawyer, and I know thousands of lawyers. I don't know a single other lawyer who's seen a suit settle the next day. Maybe mm-hmm. you have, Rachel, but
no.
I've never seen that happen the next day. Okay. So, and again, if somebody was saying something really heinous, so let's say I am by Diddy's comparison of money, right? Cassie is broke by comparison to Diddy money, right? So if I'm Diddy, if I am accused of doing sex trafficking, rape, plying you with drugs, all these heinous allegations, and that is in no way true, and you say, you put that out, that's already in the court of the public opinion, so we are discussing that and that idea of me. If that is not true, and I, who have more resources, more money, all of this, can combat that at trial, then I'm combating that at trial, not immediately giving you the money and avoiding depositions and hearings in a single day in court. I feel we don't even need legal expertise to figure out what our common sense tells us there.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel like people should feel about, from your perspective, what you just said, how do you feel like people should feel about Puff right now? Because what really happens is, we'll talk about this, we're going to discuss a little bit more. What really people want to know is the answer to that question. They want to know how they should feel about it, right? And they want clarity. Oh, look, people want it given to them. They want somebody to say guilt or innocence. They want someone to say good or bad. They want someone to say yes or no, up or down. And, you know, Aubrey O'Day talked about this, and she said, money over accountability once again.
I'm going to be started on her. Because she needs to hush. She said, pursue it yourself, Miss Mamas, okay? If you're not going to do it yourself, you don't seem to be taking that route, right? And the minute a woman independently goes to pursue a legal route herself to deal with justice about her own trauma, you try to co-opt it, make it about yourself. And then when she doesn't do what you want to happen, she doesn't have her business play out in the court of public opinion, which Aubrey has not made it her job. Aubrey is not sitting there exposing a 35 document of her trauma. She's not exposing her trauma to the court to be picked apart. But the minute this woman doesn't want to do it, then you come running your mouth. Either you decide to go open your mouth and tell your story and be prepared to deal with that and the backlash and the kind of treatment, or you offer solidarity to other women who are able to do it and be quiet. But this right here, she ain't doing nothing but just seeming like she wants some kind of attention. If there's somebody we need to have a conversation about attention, it's Aubrey, because based on how she's acted after the fact, because that's not what you do. If you are somebody who has accused Diddy of abuse, or saying that Diddy has exploited y'all or treated you some kind of way, and this is your experience, and he is this big force that you've not been able to challenge, if you see a woman go and challenge him and immediately be met with all kind of criticism, backlash, her life picked apart, why is your immediate action to then go jump on that money, not accountability? What are you even talking about? What does the court have to do with accountability? It's a civil suit. It was always going to be about money. What are we talking about?
I'm wondering, are you surprised by the reactions that you've seen? Because it hasn't just been from Aubrey. But yeah, two, no. Like, all abuse cases are not the same. Neither are their victims. Why do we constantly see the court of a public opinion say otherwise? Why do they always try to treat it like it's the same?
So I'm not surprised about the reaction. And I, for exactly what your second question is that they treat it like it's the same, that we always see this. I said, the minute it happened, I said, we are going to see what we always see anytime a woman accuses somebody of abuse. We see a swell of support, either not just from fans and people in the audience, people who weren't even fans of them in the industry in and of itself, you know, cover for them. And I said, it's going to be extreme in the case of Diddy, because Diddy is a powerful figure, like him or not, or whatever it is. Diddy is not somebody that people can easily challenge. So I expected to see that kind of backlash, or see people wanting to be quiet. I think what's interesting in the Diddy situation is that there are more people, I think, wanting to be quiet in terms of, if you look at celebrities or news outlets or blogs that do this kind of coverage, than it is jumping out to defend him. And I think that's really telling, that you don't see as many people willing to say, hey, I've known Diddy for 20 years and he would never do something like that. Which you instead, people be like, let's not talk about this. And then just a few people willing to jump out and, like, you know, the slim thugs and the PETA guns and them, and people who really, really should do their best not to talk. They should be quiet. Yeah. They should be quiet.
Well, I'll say this, though. You can't say that, though. You can't say, hey, I've known Diddy for 20 years and he would never do that. When you do that, you will be flayed. The only recourse you have, even if there's somebody out there who straight up does not believe that ever could happen, they've only been around Puff on his great days or whatever, you really couldn't say that. The only either you come down strictly against what happens and say, I believe everything, or you don't say anything. There's really, and that's why people kind of, they want to know, they want the legal system to tell them what to say. They want to have some certainty to be able to back it up. And I think some people are frustrated with the ambiguity of a settlement.
But they don't. Sorry. I mean, just to what you just said, bringing up the Meg Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez, the court said guilty, and you still had people all the details were there. It was very obvious, without having any legal knowledge, what was it in that case. The facts were there. He's found guilty, and people still say otherwise. So, well, I don't know
what I'm saying is, we're talking about the number of people, right? And so this is what I would say. The number of people that, obviously there are going to be people in the middle of, on the edges of the Tory Lanez thing, far, far, far in the Tory camp. But I think there were a lot of people, prominent people, radio people, TV people, whatever, that was like, hey, let's just wait to see what the court says, and whatever the court says, let's just wait to see how it plays out. And then however it plays out, it's whatever. The Free Tory people, it wouldn't have mattered if they would have caught him with blood all over himself, singing about shooting her or whatever. And the people on the other side, it wouldn't have been the same thing, no matter what the court had said. If Tory would have somehow beat it, then there still would have been people that have been like, the courts didn't uphold what we know happened, which is that he shot her.
Yeah,
so
I said that.
So there are people, you said that, right?
I did.
So there are people on both sides of it. What I'm saying is, the people who are fair-minded about it are like, okay, well, let's see what the court of what a court of law says, you know?
I agree that it's true that you would get filleted if you come out like, oh, I don't believe that this could happen. And you should get that response because that's a ridiculous response. Anytime anybody is accused of any kind of intimate partner violence, were you in a relationship? Do you know there's no reason for you to jump out in it? And we should question the motivations for anybody who wants to come out and dismiss the experience of somebody that they cannot possibly testify to. But I think it's important that no matter that is the response that you would get, especially more in recent times. I've been Black for 30 years. I have never seen a Black man, a celebrity accused of something like this or something, any kind of abuse. And there have not still been celebrities willing to die on that hill, prominent or not. Right. Tory ain't even nobody by comparison. Tory Lanez is not as big of a star as Meg Thee Stallion, much less a Diddy. And he still had the LeBron James, Drake and Tory Lanez have had their own beef. Drake still turned around and they're going to come out and they're going to champion a Tory Lanez. Right. You saw Bill Cosby. You saw the Felicia Rashad's ready to come out for them. You saw R. Kelly, down to even our blessed Keke Palmers of today were coming out trying to defend them. I've always seen that. Even the Trey Songz of the world had the Wendy Williams and them caping for them. There have always been people willing to come out and do it. Right. So I think in the case of Diddy, it is still telling that you don't see these bigger people willing to put their name on the line in the same way and say, that's my friend, I know he wouldn't do it. You kind of see the opposite. People have been like, yeah, Diddy's a weirdo, but I'm fine with that. We know Diddy parties is this. We know these things kind of happen, but it is what it is. And I'm not really saying nothing because people know. So I think it is telling in that regard. When it comes to the legal situation, again, I, as a lawyer, I just feel like there is a misconception we have about the legal system. Like, the legal system is filled with regular, like, real people, real actors who are discerning things and looking at things and determine what evidence. Juries are made up of regular people. There is no magical thing that happens in a court system that makes it any more the truth or this is bestowed by this judge or anything like that. And I think we know that as Black people, we know that. So it's kind of, it feels disingenuous when only in these scenarios, in abuse scenarios, when there are women claiming abuse, when suddenly we have this conversation, it's like, oh, we pretend as though to be neutral or to be fair or to be arbiters of justice is to wait on a court system that we don't trust or believe in any other regard to tell us something. So I just don't quite buy that. I think it's fair to say we don't know what was there. There are complaints or allegations, but I think a reasonable, informed looking at something is to say, if somebody makes allegations against you, they make allegations against you. You have all the money in the world to fight it. They make damning allegations. And you, in the dead of night, that happened in Friday night. That's when it's released, which I also think is important, right? In terms of the weekend coverage and getting to the next week. I also think there's a tactical move on that and waiting to put out that statement and settle that in the dead of night. That coming out, come on. Come on. And then suddenly all these outlets that didn't say anything at first said nothing. Revolt, BT posted nothing. Revolt said nothing. And then suddenly they only could put out a post that it's been settled with Diddy's face. Come on.
So I do want to just ask one more question about this. And then I want to make sure we get to the difference between the standard in a civil suit and a legal suit. So
yes.
Then how do everything that you're saying makes perfect sense. But I feel like there is space there. How do we then deal with allegations that are made? So if there's no way to, if there's no standard that exists that lends credence to allegations or, you know, says the allegations are false, if the legal criminal standard isn't good enough, if the civil standard isn't good enough, because these are all people, which I agree with, then is then the very assertion of allegations enough to say that all of this stuff happened? Because
no.
What I'm saying is, and that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is like, we talked about the Tory thing, and Rachel said, even if he gets off, I still believe that he did it, right? Mm-hmm. So are we saying that it's up to every person to believe allegations or innocence? And that's cool, no, but if we do that, then there's no way to hold somebody accountable culturally.
I think, one, we have to look at the information in the case. Like Rachel said from the beginning, not everything is the same. It's not the same. So we can't take that same, like this kind of broadness approach to dismiss all of the different things that happen in this individual case to make people come to an informed decision that, yeah, there is likely some guilt here. I also think we have to have a conversation about who is we and what is justice, because I think it's when these things that happen in the discourse, because these are celebrities or we want to talk about it, I think we get it we get it misconstrued. Cassie is an individual person that is alleging she experienced abuse. Like, she experienced significant amounts of abuse and trauma. And Cassie, as an individual person, was trying to find the only route she felt available to her. And I think that's important, right? The Adult Survivors Act, the statute of limitations was getting ready to run up on that. And she decided to take the only route available to her to get justice for what she experienced. There's really no reason why a populace who did not experience her abuse is trying to determine what they think is satisfactory justice or what counts there, right? What matters there is what she was trying to do, how she was trying to heal, and how she was trying to approach and answer and rectify her abuse. It's not really up for us to decide whether or not we think it was appropriate justice, because we wanted to determine how we feel about it, whether or not I think it's right, whether or not I think it's true. I think the reason that question is happening is because people want to decide whether or not it's okay to still like Diddy, how other people are going to feel about us if you continue to like Diddy. And I think that then becomes a different conversation about our morals, our views, our virtue signaling. How do we distinguish between being consumers of a product and whether or not we support and stand? And that's an entirely different conversation that's getting conflated with whether or not this individual woman experienced justice or got what she was looking for based on the experience and the trauma that she had and she's trying to rectify.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Adult Survivors Act, which I was going to say if we could talk a little bit about, just because another question that people have is, well, why did she wait till now? Again,
yeah,
everything is not the same. But why did she wait till now? Why was it so, you know, like, why after all these years together and then years apart, did she decide to file this suit in New York in federal court?
So the Adult Survivors Act is the statute that gives her a claim that she's able to file under. And there's a statute of limitations on it. And it was getting down to, based on the time in which these claims have happened, it was almost this. I think maybe it's like a week or a year, some small period of time that she has left before she was able to sue. So that's the legally why. As to the real why that people are engaging in, oh, why she waits so late. I think respectfully, that's stupid. We live in a society where most people, I know most women, I don't know women who haven't experienced sexual abuse or some kind of sexual harassment or sexual assault. And that has never been responded to by a society that's like, oh, I believe you. Get justice. You know what I mean? No, that's not what happens. You have your trauma picked apart. You have to convince a populace, a courtroom, police, and whomever it is or whatever to believe what you're saying when they're inclined not to, right? Most rape kits, there are hundreds of thousands of rape kits that go untested each and every single year. Most people that actually go through the court system and the criminal system find the police don't even file charge, don't even make arrest, don't even care. The criminal system does not prosecute or continue to go down that right. So there's a reason why people keep, and we know it. We're literally the fact that we have to have these conversations is the reason why that we need to, that why someone would wait or why someone wouldn't tell at all, right? And I think when you think about it, right, if you just look at Diddy as somebody who throughout his career has had not these kinds of allegations, but throughout his career, you've had different women allege different things and then recant it or take it back, or different other people that have known him do interviews and allege different things. And what happens? The public ultimately decides to, you know, turn it into entertainment fodder, debate it, this is in the next thing. And then the people are ultimately dismissed. They're laughed off, even about the things that are not sexual abuse, just regular, you know, exploitation in music and career. And people are completely dismissed. And Diddy goes on to continue being Diddy. So what really is the motivation? And if you ask why now, well, I'd say, when could she have done it that people would have been receptive to it? Had she done it when she was young, let's say she did it when this just started happening. Diddy, Cassie's relationship with Diddy on public file begins at what, like 19? Had she done it then, people would have said, oh, she's trying to make a name off of him. This is her trying to make a name off him. Had she done it when they first split, they would say she did it because she's bitter about the breakup. They would say she's bitter about the breakup. And then if so, when could she do it? I think it makes sense that she would wait until she has a husband and a family and she's far enough removed and she could have some kind a level of stability and some kind of support to fight this. And I think there's also a reason why this was tried to have this kind of conversation privately. There's a lot that goes into the decision to go take something like that public. I'm sure it didn't happen lightly, having the public discuss your trauma and that you've been raped or your sexual acts, where they're going to try to disbelieve you, slut shame you, and all this and the next thing. That is a hard, heavy thing to take on. So when people say why now, it's really more so like where the question really should be is, where'd she find the strength to do it at all? Not just why now. It makes perfect sense why she would have waited, both legally and just socially, what we know about how the public responds to sexual abuse allegations.
There's been a whole documentary on Russell Simmons, right? Yeah. It's almost as if people just forgot about it, don't talk about it, ignore it, has not nearly been as public. L.A. Reid, there's a suit against L.A. Reid right now. Diddy now coming under fire publicly. With all of this, you've got Trey Songz, you have Tory Lanez, R. Kelly, the list goes on and on and on. Do you think that with a Diddy being so big and so influential, being this mogul that he is, not just in hip hop, but just in the culture period, as a businessman, all of that, and been such a staple for 30 plus years, do you think that with him coming under fire, that this will be some kind of turning point when it comes to hip hop? Do you think that this is stepping into like a Me Too era of hip hop? We need someone like a Diddy accusation, because I have to say these are allegations. Did you need that to maybe turn the tide when it comes to this culture?
No, they created an honorary award for Dr. Dre just this year. You know, I watched a documentary just this year with Dee Barnes recounting what everybody knew that Dr. Dre did to them. We've seen a movie. We've seen multiple movies get made about Michelet. What happened? So, no, I don't think so. I wish, but to me, it's played out exactly how I thought it would. Seeing a silence when the allegations drop, seeing resounding silence amongst the blogs and the coverage and the outlets, right? And then only after, then they say something, and then they choose to cherry pick the videos and the tweets that they circulate are only the ones casting negative aspersions on Cassie. So no, I don't think so. I think what we're going to see is a little bit of silence on this issue. It's going to be about 4 months, a couple of months are going to pass, and then they're going to have Diddy being cute with Carisha or coming out or doing something or endorsing something. And that's what's going to happen, because the reality is, He's too powerful, and he's not the first. He's not even the first to have it highlighted in this way. It's just, I think, because it's Diddy and Cassie, and it surprised us all to see, again, the 35-page allegations. But we've been making movies and documentaries and openly discussing what different artists just as big as him, or different people in the hip-hop community that are just as big as him, have done for decades without recourse. So I wish it would. I wish it would, but I don't think it will.
Where can they find you, goddammit?
Follow me on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, everywhere at Miss Olurin, MSOLURIN, and follow my YouTube channel, Olurinati.
Man, you guys got to go watch with me, her friend Gabby. Gabrielle. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, Gabrielle. You guys got to go on there. I'm going to plug it. We discussed
Carly Russell.
It was Carly Russell.
Yeah.
Boy.
We had a debate.
It was a lot of fun. My mother watched it. She couldn't get over the fact of how beautiful we all are. She was looking at it. She was like, Jesus Christ, these black children are so beautiful. I'm like, Mom, I'm 43 years old.
It was a nice, beautiful black shot. And Rachel, you have to come on now too. Now that we've
oh, I would
met.
Love to.
Thank you so
Bye,
much.
Everybody.
Thank
Bye.
You so much for
Thank
joining
you.
Us on Our Learning.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down in your local wherever, and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
This episode is brought to you by Ulta Beauty. Ulta Beauty is the place where beauty loves you back. With the Ultimate Rewards program, when you shop, you earn points that can be used toward products or beauty services. What better place to shop for holiday gifts and get rewarded? Van, have you done your holiday shopping yet?
A little bit of it. A little bit of it. Yeah.
For who?
For all different types
me,
of people.
For me, I know. I already know you did it for me.
I did a little bit of it for
Let
you.
Let me give you a list
give it
of
to
things
me.
I like.
Now.
Now? Is that what you said?
Give me the list.
Okay. Well, one, I love self-care products.
Okay.
Because most things I can get for myself, right? So it's like the little things. Mm-hmm. So I love face masks. You should get into face masks too if you can. anything that moisturizes my face, sunscreen, lotion, and this is what I'm going to give you. This is your stocking stuffer. Okay. Remember when we had that episode and those lips were chapped?
Chapped
and I had
lips.
To slide you over something?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to get you.
Nice.
I need some of that too. They have these lip masks that you can use.
A mask for your lips?
Yeah, yeah. Like they take the crust off, or you can do like a lip scrub.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like a little lip scrub to get like, because like I got the big lips and they look nice and plump when they're
My audience doesn't want all that. Okay, you guys can get rewarded for your holiday shopping with Ulta Beauty's Ultimate Rewards Program. Make sure to get all your purchases in before December 31st. That way you can keep or level up your status and take advantage of the benefits you love all 2024. And with the same day pickup or delivery, Ulta Beauty makes it easy to avoid all those lines. So head to your local Ulta Beauty store, buy online and pick up in store, or shop in the app today. Ulta Beauty, the possibilities are beautiful.
Rach, it was great to have our guest on
us. Yes, it was. She's great.
All this fantastic. I just wanted to know, what's your reaction to everything that went down with Cassie and Didi? What do you think?
I mean, I think it's very obvious in the way I was asking my questions and some of the responses that I had that, and even how you guys have seen me react before on this podcast when there have been allegations of abuse on behalf of from a woman, allegations from a woman about a man. I believe women. So I believe everything that Cassie is saying until something tells me otherwise. I choose to believe her. And just for a number of reasons, I mean, she was so detailed. It would be wild for a lot of that to be fabricated. And just because of who he is, that takes a lot of strength, courage to come out and knowing how the court of public opinion is, knowing how people tend to victim blame and shame, she knew that, had to know that was coming, yet she still went forward with it. I think that her being married, I think her having two young daughters played a factor into that. And I think that she needed to get that out. Like, I think she needed justice for herself, but I think also there's a mental health aspect to that as well about getting that out. I
feel like she didn't want to carry that type of secret.
And seeing two daughters, it's like, well, what kind of, and I'm so guessing here, I'm assuming, but like thinking about your role as a woman and the woman that you want your daughters to be and how you want, in a world you want them to grow up in, and keeping that a secret inside and not standing, you know, speaking out and telling your, I have to say, alleged truth. So I think, I believe her, because I just think that maybe it would have torn her up inside, and obviously it has. If you've read the court document, all the mental anguish and stuff that she's alleging that she suffered, obviously she was suffering by not saying anything. But I believe her. I just believe her.
So when I was in the back and forth I was having with Ola, I think what I was trying to get at and what I was trying to articulate is not what the ashy motherfuckers are going to say, and not what the people that don't believe that there's any daylight for there to be a false allegation are going to say, that every single woman is telling the truth and every single man is lying. There are people on both ends of the spectrum, but then there are people in the middle who just want to try to understand how they can affect a better, safer, healthier culture for not just women, because here's the deal. Obviously, it's for women. It's for the safety and protection of women. You want a better culture. But it's also so that, like, black men don't become abusive pieces of shit. Yeah. The world is better when there are less abusive pieces of shit in the community, right? And, you know, if there's a cultural edict to affect that in a whole way, then I think that there's some things that people wanted. Like, for the last decade of Diddy's life, he has been a lifestyle salesman, not necessarily even selling music, a lifestyle salesman, very aspirational to a lot of people, jet setting, Ciroc lifestyle, activism and political awareness for what it's worth for some people, the healing and the love message, all of that stuff. And for a lot of people, that's resonated in a very, very big way, very inspirational to a lot of people. And I think what people are starting to ask, the question that people are starting to ask is, what price do you pay for your inspiration? What price do you pay for your lifestyle, aspirational stuff? Like, what price do you pay for it? And what price does someone pay for it, right? Is there throngs of young black girls that play for your education, for your entertainment, shall I say, if it's R. Kelly, for your... These are all allegations. These are allegations that Diddy's lawyer and Diddy, like, straight up denies. But the question is still central. Like, for you to have a good time, for you to have fun, for you to party, for you to feel good, for you to get whatever it is that you're getting, what price are you willing to pay for that? And what price are you willing to watch somebody else pay for it? If it turns out after all of this time that whomever it may be, is guilty of all of these horrific things or have done all of these horrific things, do you say, hey, that happens, separate the art from the artist or whatever? Or do we make it a point to say, there's no amount of fun, there's no amount of awareness, there's no amount of good messages, there's no amount of anything that would make it okay for someone to have to live through that? Now, that's a question that we're asking. And to be honest with you, it's a difficult one because, you know, in past generations, they never asked it. Like right now, if I told somebody right now to go and Wikipedia James Brown, we talked about this before. If I told you to go Wikipedia James Brown, some of these other people, you would look at that and think James Brown is a fucking terrorist. And that's not a diss to James Brown, you guys. But if you look at all of the things that he did in his life, all of the stuff that he was doing outside of making amazing, beautiful. No, James Brown.
Well,
both. Both. And that, yes. That goes to the point. I was on Twitter and I was some kind of way, Sam Cooke and Bobby Womack came up.
Oh, because he married his wife.
Married his wife, but then also married Sam Cooke's wife and wore Sam Cooke's suit to his funeral. But then after he married Sam Cooke's wife, then started having a relationship with that woman's 17-year-old daughter. Like, when you go back and look at all of this stuff, the questions about whether or not these people were good people, we just used to not ask them.
Right.
We used to just not ask the question whether or not somebody was paying for all of the entertainment or whatever that you got. Now we're asking the questions, and I don't think we like the answers that we're getting.
Of course not.
And so the question is, if we're asking that question, like, how do you get an answer? And that's what I was trying to ask. And, like, what could the answer be? And people are frustrated when a situation like this comes up and it's left in ambiguity. By the way, I am not in any way saying, you guys, please be certain that I'm not saying that it's...
I don't think I come across that way.
It's Cassie's job to take this all the way through. Cassie got what she was trying to get, which was acknowledgement, in my opinion, for what she said she went through, and the financial payoff for what she says she went through, which, by the way, guys, is justice. We talk about that being justice in so many different instances, like Ola said. I just think, like, we're treading water almost. It's tough. Because for me personally, I do a lot of work with Revolt. I've known Diddy. Me and Diddy are not best friends. Let me not try to couch it. I've done a lot of work with Revolt. I'm on Revolt all the time. I love going down there and working with Revolt. Let me tell you guys something about going down there to the studio in Atlanta and working with them. Like, I go a lot of places and I do a lot of things, right? When you're in Revolt Studios in Atlanta, you walk in there and it's black women in there humming and singing. The show that we did, Bet on Black, it's a fantastic show. It's very black. It's very amazing to go down there and work with them and be a part of the ecosystem down there. I love it. I love what they've put together. I love what they're doing. And I want them to be more successful than anything, right? So for somebody like me who does that, or for somebody like me who had a relationship with Puff since the moment that he became aware of my existence, yeah. Like, I would like to know what's true and what's not true.
Well, and this, and to what you were saying when you were asking, like, you want clarity, or people want clarity. They're seeking that, or maybe even they feel like they need that. I do feel like it's a personal choice. It always is when it comes to these type of questions that you're asking. You have to decide for yourself. I don't, because, like, for example, we mentioned Tory, or even if you mentioned, like, OJ, they're found innocent, but then people still have their feelings based off what, even though a court of law found this to be true, people have feelings based on other evidence or things that have come out after that they believe to be true and feel like it was wrong in this sense. Because as Ola was saying, these are people making these decisions. These are regular people making these decisions in like a jury. So I do feel like it's personal, and that, and you can even say that because of how we deal with Michael, right? Michael Jackson. It's personal.
But my thing is, though, it's personal. Let's be honest. As a culture, we have made a decision.
Correct.
About Michael Jackson.
Correct.
We've made a decision about Michael Jackson. I'm glad that she said we shouldn't be throwing anybody away, right? But there is a situation that exists to where sometimes a motherfucker has done too much, man.
Correct. Like R. Kelly.
Yeah, but let's be real. R. Kelly, but if the allegations against Michael Jackson are true as well,
I agree with you, it's
ghastly and horrific.
But he was found innocent, right? And we took that.
He was found innocent. And by the way, just want to let...
And then in some cases, another case, he settled.
Want to let you guys know something, though. This is the thing about Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson had his day in court. Michael Jackson was found innocent. Not only that, but I've read and seen things that maybe you guys haven't. There is a lot of reason to believe that Michael Jackson didn't do the stuff that they said he did. And this is not me. I'll say this again. Mike Walters at TMZ, a guy who didn't give a fuck about it, he was like, he was reading all of this stuff, and he actually came to me one day after I had made a joke about it, and he said, you know what? He said, you know, I don't think Michael Jackson did that stuff. But once again, neither here nor there. What I'm trying to say is that it is up to everyone to try to understand these situations for themselves. It is. It is up to everyone. But we're also asking for a higher standard of cultural accountability than we've ever asked for before. We are.
Well, that's true.
We're asking for a higher standard of culture. We're asking new questions. And I think it's worth the conversation of how we answer them. You know, when Colin Kaepernick took his settlement with the NFL, a lot of people were like, done. He settled. It must have not been that big a deal to him. We want him to be an activist right now, and which is something that he said that he took a mantle he took up that Cassie didn't. So those are two completely different things. But I think a lot of people like look at these things from what do the institutions that we were told matter to us, what do they have to say? And I think that she was so spot on about how it really doesn't matter what those institutions say anyway. So what's the cultural standard that we have in terms of trying to understand what makes sense and what doesn't?
And you know why I think it's so hard to have a standard? Because a standard is like takes all the feeling and the emotion out of it. Right. And this is emotional. Right. When you talk about the things that Diddy has done in the Black community and continue until these allegations, what he represented. Right. Like you saw it one way. Yeah, he's been in trouble before. But like not this, not these type of allegations.
Not this clearly laid out.
Right.
Right.
And especially when there had been rumors and people had always raised an eyebrow about that relationship. Then to have this come out in this way, that it's just, it stings. And so it's hard to create this standard that may be something that we need and very well deserving when it's personal to you, right? Like you talk about Revolt. Revolt represents so much to the community and is doing great things. But just because Diddy created it, does that now put a cloud over Revolt? Should people not support Revolt? Do they? No. Like, it still doesn't take away from the fact that he did great things for the community. But now it's like separating him as a person from some of the work that he's done. But I think it hurts overall to create the standard because you do tie him to so many things. You talked about the lifestyle. You talk about what he means to a new generation, the fact that he has daughters. It's so complex that it's hard to just draw a line in the sand, which is what a standard would create.
Right. I do want to say something to all of our OGs out there. And I really mean this, man. And I can't big brother the big brothers, but I'm just saying this. Get help. Seriously. We realize that you guys came up from fucked up situations. We realized it was bad. We realized that you came through all of this stuff, man. The 90s were wild. Everybody was getting money. Everyone was shooting at everybody. And all of this stuff was going on. Y'all partied. Y'all did a lot of drugs. Y'all did all of this stuff. Everyone realizes all of that. A lifestyle is no excuse for hurting people. A lifestyle is no excuse for usury. It's no excuse for any of that stuff. For all of these men that we've looked up to for such a long time, all of these people that we have entrusted culturally for such a long time, look at the things that are happening now as the opportunity to affect people, not just outside of your personal life, but inside of your personal life in a different way. Heal, man. Responsibility, accountability, and growth is the only thing I can promise that I'll do for myself, because I've been a fucked up, low down, dirty ass nigga too. Absolutely. I fucking definitely have. But man, we owe it to ourselves to be better examples. All of this stuff coming out is deeply, deeply, these are just allegations. I'm not damning, condemning, or putting guilt on anyone. But what I'm saying is, just being tangential to that type of thing, yo, we have got to heal. Have to heal. And then I guess everybody else make your own decision on what that looks like and how that goes and what you feel like is cool to heal from and what you feel like has to be discarded. But very serious situation. I guess it remains to be seen, you know, how things go moving forward, you know, and everybody can make up their own minds about it.
Don't just read the headlines or read the five things to take away. Take the time to read it. It's very detailed, and some of it has been confirmed from people.
Yeah.
Next topic.
This fucking.
I know.
Tough,
I know.
All right. Let's move on. I want to say something to Drake real quick.
Drake.
Yeah, Drake.
Drake,
we love you, bruh. I want to let Drake know that. Black America, we love you.
Does he? He doesn't think we do.
So Drake put
he said
out
that in his music.
Drake put out a scary, like a new deluxe for all the dogs. Did you listen to it?
I did not.
Scary Hours Deluxe Edition for all the dogs. Good rap music on there.
I'm hearing very positive reviews.
Good rap music. Just like Drake can do whatever he wants musically. He can be a good rapper. He can be a slightly mediocre artist. He can be the best pop star in the world. Drake can do whatever. It's just about what Drake wants to do. If he wants to get up and he wants to fucking rap as good as the greatest rappers on the planet, he can do that. If he wants to sing as good as the R&B people, he can do that. If he wants to make like not very ambitious sort of middling music, he can do that too. But like if he kick people in the ass and, you know, let people know, he can still do whatever he wants to do. But there's one lyric on there, one of the songs. It said, white America says I'm becoming a threat. Black America loves to remind me what my mama looked like, as if I could ever forget. Drake's mom is white.
Yeah, I'm aware. Say the line again.
White America says I'm becoming a threat.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Sure about that. Black America loves to remind me what my mama looked like.
That's true.
In case you think that last part is true.
That's true.
So you feel like we harp on Drake's biracialness.
Yes, but not because he is biracial. It's because Drake is so the Drake now is so different from the Drake we first met when he started rapping. And it seems like he's trying to be something that he's not. And I feel like that's why the Black community, and not in Blackness, just in lifestyle. And so that's why the Blackness, that's where I feel like people are constantly reminding him about who his mom is, or the fact that he was on Degrassi, or where he grew up. Like, no, truly, that it's all in there together.
Let me ask you this. Do you
when
think
he came out, nobody pushed back on that?
Well, nobody pushed back on what?
When he first came out, it was like, oh, there's this kid from Toronto who used to be a TV star who can sing and rap. He wasn't rapping about hard stuff like that.
He's not really rapping about hard stuff now. He's got some like, stuff in there.
Listen, at his concert, he's wearing like a bulletproof vest and he's pop, bosh, talking about shooters and killers and stuff like
can
that.
Can I be honest with you though?
So,
I mean, he's not, Drake is not like, but he... In a way,
he is so different from "I Just Want to Be Successful," Drake. And
that
first,
that
first, it was so good, and nobody was reminding him because it was like, "This is me. This is who I am." And you have to admit and listen. I like Drake's music. This isn't like talking about his music. I'm just saying why people are constantly now. They didn't start off that way, reminding him who his mom is.
They didn't. I will say this: that there may be some people around Drake now that weren't around him before, and it's not like he doesn't matter in the streets of Toronto. If you ask people from Toronto.
I didn't say he didn't.
Yeah, Drake and them kind of, I mean, they run Toronto a little
but
bit.
But that's now. That's not how he grew up.
Yeah, I get it.
That's like me, the daughter of a federal judge.
But you used to be in Field City.
From First Baptist Academy, talking about like this life. And it's like, well, maybe now you're around some of that. But like, that's not, if I first came out and started rapping, I would be rapping about going to private school.
See.
I'd be Clarence.
See, yeah, parents have a real good marriage. Okay, so I don't really need my rappers to be like hardened super criminals.
No, we don't.
So when a rapper says that he did something, it's I don't really care too much. It's like, I remember Hov had one lyric where he said, smoking something with Castro and Cabanas or whatever. It's like, I'm like, that probably didn't happen, you know? Or Rick Ross said, the real Noriega, he owed me 100 favors. I'm like, he probably doesn't, you know? I get it, guys. You did some stuff, but some of the stuff you're talking about, it's like whatever, right? It's whatever. But like, I wonder, it kind of, because Drake had this lyric, and he also had the whipped and chained like American slaves on the song that he did before. I'm wondering if Drake feels disconnected from Black America a little bit. Because there's a difference between being biracial and being light-skinned.
I don't think he feels, I think he's saying we are, I don't think he himself feels disconnected. I think it's a dig on Black people who are disconnecting him. Does that make sense?
Can I say something though? Mm-hmm. Drake is our favorite son. Hmm. Drake is Black America's favorite son, and I can prove it.
Okay.
Now, you don't have family members that went to jail, do you?
I do.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Did your dad put him in jail? That would be so crazy.
He did not.
That would be so crazy.
He'd have to recuse himself.
Oh, you would have to recuse yourself? You shouldn't have to.
Yes, you should. You're biased.
Nah, man. You should be able, if I'm an elected
judge. Actually, I feel like my dad could be very by the book. I would.
If I'm an elected judge, elected by the people, I should be able to give whatever sentence to anyone, even if my cousin, a day.
What if you're appointed?
If I'm appointed, well.
And you can only way you're out is if you're impeached.
Here's the deal, though. So he's an appointed judge by Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is true. That is a little different. Because then you could just appoint people and, you know, with whatever. But let me think about that. I would like to, I don't think
definitely
you should have to recuse.
I
don't think you have, okay. So look, there's something that happens with your grandmama, right? If you have uncles that are in jail or if you have siblings. Sometimes it feels like your grandmother loves or the family loves the uncle that's in jail more than they love everybody else, right? Because they hold everyone else to a standard.
Sure.
That they don't hold the incarcerated loved one to.
Very true.
You've seen that before, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you graduate, you make straight A's. You go, oh, good for you, baby. Did you see that your uncle won the prison basketball tournament? That boy is one of the most talented, whatever. Always seems like, and everybody else's shit gets suspended sometimes, or it's not as good as the person that's away. The love is harder. We love on them harder. And I feel like we do that for Drake a little bit. I feel like there's a lot of standards that the grandmother with the kid in jail doesn't hold them to that they hold everybody else to, right? You got to do stuff that your brother or your son that just came home from jail doesn't have to do. You have to do this. You have to do that. They always seem a little bit funnier, always seem a little bit cooler. They get like favorite kid status.
So is he as a low standard?
Well, we've changed the standards from Drake in many ways because we love him that much.
I feel like he has a high standard.
No, think about it. Think about this. I say that we've loved Drake more than we've loved any other rapper. Any other rapper. We treat him, any other rapper. Like, Drake has broken every hallowed hip-hop rule.
Is that us?
That's us, because we don't even care. Drake is still Drake. Like, think about it. Like, you're not supposed to have ghostwriters in hip-hop. You're not supposed to ever have ghostwriters. We're like, fuck it, it's Drake. It's cool, whatever. He's got a lot of stuff on his plate. We don't care. Not supposed to have ghostwriters, right? Yeah, it's confirmed. The reference tracks came out. You know what I mean? You have to have a bona fide classic album to be considered a GOAT of hip hop. I love Take Care. Love it.
It's great.
It's fantastic. It's not a bona fide classic. You know, we're like, fuck it, it's great. Drake, he gives us so much good music that it doesn't matter that he doesn't have like a bona fide classic, because he gives us so much good music. We made up a new rule for it. Drake, somebody diss you in rap, you're supposed to respond. You're supposed to respond, 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 respond. Pusha T diss Drake. Drake says, hey, LeBron James told me not to respond. We're like, fuck it, it's Drake. Drake is bigger than any hip hop standard. We love Drake so much that we don't even hold him to the same hip hop standards that we hold everybody else to. He's like in his own category. That's how much we love Drake.
Are you saying we consider him a GOAT?
Yeah, Drake is definitely considered a GOAT. There's no way you can't consider Drake a GOAT right now.
Overall, right now, or like if you had to name like a top five, would you put him in it?
Drake has had the single greatest rap career of any rapper ever.
I'm not talking about like records and record sales. If black people, because part of that is not black people, right? A lot of that's not black people that have made him, that.
But it doesn't work without black people.
Okay, but that have made him that. Are you saying that if you had to name a top five, or black people had to name a top five, overall, because that's GOAT status, right? Not GOAT right now. Sure, GOAT right now, fine, whatever. But if you have to give him a top five, would you put Drake in it?
So here's the thing.
I don't think black people would.
If you're going to do a top five best MCs of all time, maybe you don't put Drake in there, maybe. But if you're going to do a top five greatest rappers,
I don't think black people would put him in it.
You have to put Drake in the top five.
I don't think black people would. I really don't.
So the fact that Drake is a great rapper, like a great rapper, and has made great music for this long, and has been this much of a global phenomenon, like he's had the biggest rap career of anybody almost ever, besides maybe Eminem. So to me, he's definitely a GOAT. He is definitely a GOAT. But he doesn't feel the love because he can't see.
Yes, black people make fun of him.
Wait, we make fun of him, but we also, black people make fun of Drake, but they also love Drake in a much deeper and different way than they've ever loved any other rapper. Drake gets away with so much stuff that other rappers, Drake, we love you, baby. It's all right, man. It's okay. Black America love Drake. You don't feel like we love Drake? We love Drake. Black America loves Drake.
Black America loves Drake's music. Black America does not love Drake.
We do love Drake.
As a person, no. People
Black
love to
America
rap.
Black America loves
I think
Drake.
People love
what?
To make,
are you
I think
Donnie.
I think they like Drake, but they love, like, as a person, that's why he, I'm using his words, that's why he doesn't feel connected to the community. They're always ragging on him. Any chance black people can get to rag on Drake, if it's in context, they do.
But that's
Donnie, what do you think?
But hold on. That's the part of it that's
yeah, I'm gonna race him on this one.
Well, hold on. That's the part of it that's othering. The part of it that's othering is the fact that black people rag on everybody they like. It's a part of being black. There's no black person.
Name a rapper who gets ragged on in the way, and I mean like legit. Don't name somebody like, I don't want to say names, but like, are they, name another rapper that's GOAT status that they rag on like Drake.
Name another rapper that be doing that type of shit.
You're proving my point.
I'm just saying.
Wait.
Like, just,
and I'm saying that's why they do. I don't
But
think
we love them for that, though. That's why we love Drake,
that's
man.
Not why I love Drake. Well, like, I like his music.
I like, but I also like the fact that Drake is, you know, the, as far as talent and, and all of that, he's different. But Drake is a lot more. That's why I like Kanye. That's why I like Drake. Drake is a lot more like me than a lot of these other people. He's a lot more.
See, I used to feel that way.
I mean, it's different now because I ain't got no hitters with me. And he got actual real hitters with him. But Drake got to, man, stop with the white America say I'm becoming a threat. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They never said that. That's never in no, that's not in the white American meetings. They never had Drake up there.
Yeah.
They didn't
you
have,
are not a renegade.
Drake
you
is not a, Drake, they, not. And the, when the white America is doing the list of people they got to take out, it's not Drake.
It's that, they're probably like, here, listen to some Drake.
And by the way, can I ask you a question? Here's the deal. So I'm telling you, there's a difference between light skin and like, J. Cole got a white mama.
And do people rag on J. Cole?
Do because it's not about the white mama.
You're literally proving my point.
That's what I'm saying about this. I'm saying it's not about the white mama. It's not about, but we make fun of J. Cole, but it's not about the white mama.
They remind him that he is because of the way he acts. Nobody's reminding J. Cole because he don't act like Drake.
Who is Tate McRae?
She's a singer.
Why?
Why are we talking about her?
But I'm saying, why is everybody talking about Tate McRae now?
I did not know everyone was talking about her.
You know who she is?
I know who she, you know why I know who she is? Because why? I was working the carpet at the MTV Awards a couple of years ago.
Tate McRae.
And she walked through and I was like, who is that? She was like hosting. Vanessa. And she's hosting. And I was like, who is that girl? I've never seen her before in my life. And they were like, that's Tate McRae. I don't know her music. I don't know anything about her, but
there was a whole Tate McRae discourse because someone put up a clip of her dancing and was like, it was like, yo, Tate McRae is bringing dancing back to pop music. And then people were like, oh, what about Normani and what about all of these other people that have been dancing? It's racist that you say that. And I'm like, who the fuck is Tate McRae?
Yeah, I'm only aware of her because of that one moment. I don't know her music, though.
We got to talk about Michael Rapaport. I want to say something before we get to Michael Rapaport. I want to send a shout out to somebody. I want to send a shout out to send a shout out to Anthony, who tried to make. Actually, I'm gonna save it for the end of the show. I remember to shout out Anthony. I'm gonna save it for the end of the show.
You just write that down for
yourself. I did. Remember to shout out Anthony. Michael Rapaport, friend of the show, you would say.
No, come on now.
Had a lot to say about how he feel like blacks would react if the hostages over in Israel / Gaza were black and what we would be doing. Our resident Negroologist, Michael Rapaport, has weighed in. Donnie, play the audio.
Yo, if 20 American tourists, forget the 1,200 people that were murdered, slaughtered, civilians. If 20 American civilians, all African-American, all black, all ages, were taken hostage, and 10 of them were murdered and raped, and there was 10 surviving American tourist hostages that were all black, there's not one motherfucker in this country that would be talking about ceasefire. There's not one person. It would be bring the fucking hostages back, and they better be alive. They better be pristine. There wouldn't be no ceasefire. There would be no rounds. Can you imagine college students ripping down posters of 10 black people from America if they were taken hostage? And 10 others were raped and murdered. Nobody would be saying shit. The African-American community would be demanding they came back. White people, black people, Jewish people would be demanding they come back. There wouldn't be a discussion of a ceasefire. That's a fact. Nobody can tell me shit that is not a fucking fact. Forget the 1,200 other people that were murdered. I'm talking about just 10. I don't compare tragedies.
Oh, that's enough. Rachel, your thoughts. I weighed in on Twitter. I want
to
know what you
mean. I really don't have that much to say. Oh, you went on Twitter and did it? I don't really have that much to say other than if this, okay. if 10 black people, if this is the standard, if what he was saying is true about how the world views black people, black people would not be in the position that they are in today in this world. If black lives were valued in this way, black people wouldn't be a Black Lives Matter movement. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, listen, I understand Michael Rapaport being upset as a Jewish person. I understand that it's upsetting that there are hostages there and there are people taking down posters. But please, I'm so sick of the narrative. And we discussed this on our podcast when we brought Daniela on. Is that her name?
Yes.
We brought Daniela on. Please stop bringing us into this. Please stop making it a tit for tat thing. Please stop saying, oh, we did this for you, so you need to, or you better do this for us. It shouldn't be a transactional thing. It should be people standing up for people and what is right and for justice and humanity. Don't bring us into that. But this is so wrong on so many levels. But the biggest one to me is this is not how the world values Black lives.
We're in danger. Remember Ghost?
The movie?
Yeah.
Molly, you in danger, girl.
The danger is that there will be irreparable damage between the Black and Jewish communities.
Do you think we're there?
Not yet. But I think that I don't think we're there yet, but I think that we need to have serious conversations about a number of things. And these conversations might not be for public consumption. These conversations might be best had amongst friends that trust each other, maybe in person, maybe not via text, maybe with people who you know have your best interests at heart. And I'll tell you why. I responded to the Michael Rapaport video on Instagram. If you guys want to see that, you can go watch it or whatever. But it's not the substance of the video that's so offending, right? We could play the what if game all we want. We will never believe that. Black people don't have the historical context in America to ever believe that our lives will be in any way valued or prioritized in any way. Now, we would be mad. Like, you can tell.
Of course.
If stuff happens to us, will we be mad? Yeah, we would be mad. We're mad when things happen to us.
Of course.
To say that other people are going to be mad, the world is going to be mad. Says Black Americans, he said America, very, very, very deft by him to say America right there, very pointed, because he knows that nobody cares what happens to Black people in Africa. Nobody cares what happens to Black people in the Caribbean. You can slaughter people in Africa. You can, like, destroy people in Haiti all over the place, and because the economics are different and the voices are different, nobody cares. So he was very clever to say Black Americans, because he feels like we're noisy and he feels like we have cultural and economic power that some Black people from other parts of the world don't have. But the inspiration of this entire thing, right, comes from a place that is putrid. Michael Rapaport for a long time has felt like he has a right to comment on us and to talk about us in ways that we could never talk about the Jewish community.
Right.
In ways that we better not open our mouths to talk about anybody else.
Right.
You see, we don't get to music our way into anybody else's community by producing documentaries or being a part of stuff. We don't get to fuck our way into anybody else's community by marriage or who we is. We don't. Very clearly, Black shit is your shit. You deal with it. Anything else is a motherfucking negotiation. Anything else. Don't matter what it is. If it's about your life, it's about your health, anything else is a negotiation. But you don't tell us even how to treat you. That's a negotiation with black people. Black people negotiate, white people dictate. That's the way that it goes, right? So for him to sit there and tell us what we should be doing, how should we be doing, what would happen, what was this, based upon his knowledge of us, when in the past he's told us that black people don't care about certain violence and other things like that, and he has to care. He has to care for us, and he has to make us care. Mm-hmm. Michael Rapaport is the god of black people. He has to care for us, right, because we don't care enough about ourselves, and then he has to make us care. Michael Rapaport is over us. He's the general of all niggas. He's the number one guy. He's the Optimus Prime of the blacks. Michael Rapaport is. But the reason why I say that it's going to a place that we can't get it back from is because, like, there is, and we talked about it on the last episode, and I talked to so many of my friends, my Jewish friends, we're talking all the time, and they're just simply not like this. They don't.
Yes, he's very extreme.
Like, they're not like this. But there's a thing that's happening to where, like, we're starting to feel like wind-up toys. And it's starting to feel like we're lesser than. And all of those things that are in the back of your mind, there's no way I could be in this room and have everybody think that I'm equal to them. There's no way they think I'm as smart as they are. There's no way that it feels like this. There's no way that they feel like that, right? You don't understand that when you say, hey, you need to do this, or hey, this is what you should do, or hey, do this, when you treat us as things, when you thingify us rather than deal with us as people, that's what happens. And then all of the people who actually mean bad for Jewish people, the Jewish diaspora across the world, the people who actually have nefarious things in their mind about them, go look, see how they look at you? They don't even think this is worth your own thought. You can't have your own thoughts about this. You can't have your own worldview about this. You can't do this. You can't do it by yourself. Like, they're telling you what you should do. They're ordering you. And then they're going to go, they did it here, they did it here, they did it here, they did it there. If we are not approached with humanity as people who have agency in this particular time right here, if the conversation is so difficult that we can't talk about it, that we just get ordered around, I'm telling you, there's going to be a cultural divide, not just with black people, that's going to permeate for a couple of generations. Because right now, there are a lot of people who are coming to all of this information for the first time.
Yes.
I'm scrolling through stories. And my son, I love you, but brother, next time, a gentle trigger warning. I'm scrolling through stories this morning, right? And Mice has a story up, and maybe I needed to see it. I shed some tears this morning. And the story is, it's of babies in Gaza. Mm. One baby had its face, it's a kid, totally blown off. Like, I want to, like, cry now. And another one, when the doctor picked the kid up, the body broke apart. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm telling you right now, if you're telling me or people that I know from my community that makes sense, you at least have to have a conversation with them. If you're going to tell me that there's a reason why that's happening, you at least have to meet them in some type of emotional and intellectual way. You can't say, that's the world. This has to, you can't dictate that. People are seeing that and they're bringing their trauma and their emotions and the way they feel and the way they see the world into that. The same thing goes to October 7th. Obviously, all of this carnage and all of this death and all of this destruction that people see over there that they also are used to hearing about and seeing in their own neighborhoods, that they have this intimate emotional understanding of, they're trying to understand that now and do what we say. It's just not a good enough response. And I'm not saying that has been the response of the entire Jewish diaspora. It hasn't at all, not even close, but there have been very prominent voices that are trying to tell people what to think and what to feel. and it comes across like supremacy. So I'm urging everyone. Michael Rappaport is not a very serious person. Like he's going to vote for Trump.
No, because now he's talking about voting for Trump.
Good for him. Good for him.
His whole platform. No, but you're right. You just have to talk about you cannot take him seriously. His whole platform has been about dogging Trump and calling him out for years. He calls him every other name. He points out all the negative stuff he's done and the anti-Semitic stuff that he's done. And now you want to vote for him because you don't think the Biden administration is doing enough to combat anti-Semitism? Like, no, he's not a serious person.
Michael Rappaport voting for Trump is the least shocking thing, or saying that he likes Trump is the least shocking
development. Well, I'm more so saying it because it's like you can't take him seriously at all. And he is the extreme. But you get on your social media, and there's a lot of people I follow that aren't far from Michael Rappaport.
Oh, it's going to happen. Everything is going to be redefined by this. And what I'm saying is, guys, there's an opportunity here to really respect one another and to really respect and create an understanding about not just this issue, but about issues that have been that have existed in our communities for a long time. Last time before I go, I want to say that I talked to Rabbi Lamb. Right.
How's he doing?
I talked to Rabbi Lamb. Rabbi Lamb right now is on his way to Israel. Yeah, he is. He said that we should talk when we get back. I talked to Rabbi Lamb a couple of weeks ago, and it was one of the single greatest conversations I've ever had before in my life. Do him and I agree on a whole bunch of things as it relates to this? No. But when we got off that phone, you know where we agreed? I wanted him safe, and he wanted me safe. I believe and love that man. I do. I believe and love that man. I think he's a good man. And you guys might go to your stuff and see a whole bunch of things that he says that you don't agree with, and he might not agree with some of the stuff that I'm saying. But I know that the core of that person, the core of that guy, is good. And if the core of him and the core of me can stay tethered, we can do good. That's what matters. Not all it is ratcheting it up in these culture wars in this time. I'm telling you, the path is darkening.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
I want to talk about something here, man. Share, man. Share a real one.
This one really... I'm shocked you were so into this, but go ahead. She's a real one. Why?
So reportedly, according to B. Scott, which is a source that I greatly trust, right? Cher, 77-year-old Cher, is feuding with her sons over her plan to cut in A.E. Alexander A.E. Edwards. It's her fortune. All right. Cher's worth some $360 million. That's a lot of I got you, babes, over the course of the years. I love. Can you believe I love after love? What's your favorite Cher joint?
I like that one, but I'm trying to think.
If I could turn back time.
That's a good one, though.
That's the one.
That's a good one.
That she had, you guys weren't around because it was the 80s. She had the whole fucking world up in arms. You know, Cher was a mature woman at that point, and she was on the naval ship. So the battleship, and she had the onesie on. If I could turn back time. Johnny, you know that joint?
If I could find my way.
That is a joint. Cher had this renaissance in the 80s with that, with Moonstruck, with her
was
acting career.
Was that the 80s? I thought it was later than that.
No, I think if I could turn back time, I think that was the 80s. I think that was the mid-80s. If I could turn back time. If I... 89.
You're right. 89. Man, 89. I thought that was like... Maybe I just, I guess I heard it later in life. I thought that was the 90s.
Nah, man. I mean, basically the 90s.
No, but 89. I mean like close to 2000s.
No. So she's in a relationship. She has been in a relationship with A.E., who is, of course, a former beau of Amber Rose. They might have been engaged. I can't remember. Amber was on here. Amber's a good friend of mine. And so,
and they share a child together.
They share a child together. Amber doesn't have the best things to say about AE, but you know, they were in a relationship. AE was for a long time a music executive. I think he might still be. He started dating Cher like last year or sometime around there. And now he might be getting cut in on the fortune. A source told the National Enquirer, while some view Cher's gesture as a heartfelt testament to her affection, others are concerned about the implications it might have on her existing family dynamics. Cher's fortune has become a focal point in a passionate debate. Changing her will to leave her much younger boyfriend something is the best option, while the worst option would be if she marries him and gives him everything. But friends emphasize that the aging singing icon is deeply smitten and wants to ensure her partner's future security after she's no longer around. At the end of the day, it's her money and she's worked her butt off since she was a teenager.
That part.
What do you think?
I think it's like, first off, Cher is fine. She's is enjoying herself. She's got a younger man, a little tenderoni. She seems to be in great health, great spirits. I saw her do some interviews recently for something she was promoting. Cher knows exactly what she's doing. She's not about, yes, she has worked her butt off. She's been working for years. She's still relevant today. You think she's given a piece, a significant piece of her fortune to AE? No. And if she is?
How do you know?
And if she is, she's a grown woman and she is entitled to do with her money whatever she desires. I think she is fully aware of what she's doing. And right now, she wants to be with this man. He makes her happy. Good for Cher.
A.E. earning this money. I'm so happy this is happening.
What do you mean he's earning his money?
He earning this money.
First off, I don't believe that this is true.
A.E. is earning this money.
What does that mean?
You know what it means.
No, I want you to say it.
You know what it means.
Because I don't agree with you.
You know what it means.
I don't agree with you.
Yeah. Drum. Okay. You know what I mean? And he is doing what he has to do to get this money. He's giving Cher a lot of inspiration, a lot of pleasure. Cher is still a very vibrant woman, right? But think about the things that he's introducing Cher to.
What is he introducing her to?
Yeah, you know.
Cher's 77. She has been around.
I'm sure she's been around. She might not have been around like this.
He might be learning some things from Cher.
All right. Well, he ain't trying to cut her in on his money. She's trying to cut him in.
Because he don't have 360.
You don't know. He must have something. I love this. I love the fact. This, to me, is equality. This is true equality. Because a lot of times, brothers, we don't get a chance to do it like this. We don't get a chance to find a woman in her older, more economically viable years. She got that cash and just put the dick on her so crazy that you end up with a couple million. We see it happen on the other side and it's okay.
So he's a gold digger.
Yeah, fucking right. What? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, he's definitely a gold digger. I would say that right now, A.E., is not just a gold digger. He's a fucking legendary gold digger, and I'm here for it. This is Anna Nicole Smith shit.
That's only if she gives him a piece of her fortune.
Oh, it's going to happen.
I don't believe that.
I think
Cher's smart enough for that.
Man,
I agree with you, bro, about the gold digger thing, but like also I think Cher's getting exactly what she wants out of it.
Bro, like y'all don't understand. This nigga from the Bay.
So?
That's a different type of pimping. That's of the game.
So he's pimping her.
That's of the game. The Bay is a different type of game. It's a different type of game. You get to it's the game is everywhere, right? Detroit, Chicago, New York, but the Bay, it's a whole culture of knowing what you're doing up there, bro. He from the Bay. It's already over.
I think you're underestimating Cher.
I would be surprised. I would be surprised if he don't leave with her masters, the whole masters. AE gonna have Tyga remix. I Got You, Babe. And it's going to go to number one. I like that. But it's not like she's not getting anything. They're having so much fun.
I know she's getting stuff out of it, but I think you're underestimating Cher.
How am I underestimating Cher?
Because you're making it seem like he's a gold digger and he's going to get her money and she's going to allow it to happen. Look, you don't last this long in this business as a fool. You just don't.
First of all, that doesn't make her a fool.
Well, if he takes half her money, it makes her a fool.
I don't know if it's, how much money, you tell me, how much money is the dick worth? Is there a such thing as a $100 million dick?
Wait, in what way? What do you mean? Like,
you
that
didn't
I'm
say
gonna,
no.
That I'm going to give? Wait. No,
Donnie,
I'm thinking of it the wrong way.
Donnie,
no.
Did you hear that?
That I'm going to get, like, if I had the money, I'm going to give somebody $100 million?
Is there such thing as dick?
Where it's so good, I'm going to give him $100
million. $100
million. No.
Not even if you had 360.
No.
It doesn't get that good.
No. See, that's a third of the money.
That's a difference. That's a difference.
Maybe a mil.
Nah, it's definitely some $100 million vagina walking around here. It's definitely true. See, that's the difference, man. See, that's what we should be talking. We should be talking about the differences. And I don't think Cher agrees with you. I think Cher has found a new lease on life.
I do, too.
And I think she's having a great time.
I do, too.
And though I say he's a gold digger because I have to keep the same energy. You can't tell me that Anna Nicole Smith looked at this guy and was like, damn, that's what I'm into. You know?
No, she was a gold digger.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, yes, he may be. I'm just saying, I don't think she's going to give him that. If that's his end goal, I don't think he's going to get that.
Hey, E. You, bruh. You is about you right now. Everything. You changing the game. I'm not hating. I'm not hating at all. Time for an apology rating. Krista Thompson. Krista Thompson basically said that she lies on Sideline Reports. A lot of bad sports news going on right now. Colorado can't get it together.
They're done. I mean, they're not. They're not going to make a bowl game. I think Dion would say the same thing. Let's just count our losses because there have been quite a few in a row. And let's just pick up and focus on the next season. I mean, they're losing recruits. Like, people are decommitting.
That was very dismissive the way you said that. They're done.
They are. There's nothing left to do here. Are celebrities still going to the games? Are they still on the sidelines?
Maybe.
They're not.
Maybe.
People, they have hopped off that bandwagon as quickly as they hopped on.
The Washington State loss was tough. Was tough.
Yes, and they're not even a good team.
Yeah.
So, like, they've lost what? 7 games in a row? It's a lot.
They haven't lost 7 in a row. I think
I wrote it down.
They are 4-7. So I think that they've lost 4 in a row.
They've lost 7 over their last 8 games.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough, man. That's tough. But they've won more games. They've won more games.
Yeah, because they were what? 1-1?
One game. Yeah.
Yeah, 1 game. So listen. I'm not saying that they can't be that program. I'm just saying right now the season's done. It's a loss. Shador's hurt. They need more talent on the team. They need more depth on the team as well. And so, listen, they're easy to pick on because of the way that they came into the season. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just saying let's count our losses. You're not going to a bowl game. Let's regroup. Let's work on, you know, like getting some better players for the team. Like I said, players are decommitting. So let's hope that they get, I think they said like now 10 are, only 10 are coming.
Look,
they have to start over. They've completely obliterated the team before and started over.
Yeah, but he's got to work the transfer portal. He's got to try to get a couple of recruits. He's got to win a couple of recruiting battles. Here's the thing. Here's a challenge for Colorado real quick. The challenge for Colorado is if you need to build an offensive line, it's very difficult to do that in the transfer portal because transfer portal offensive linemen are normally not that great. And also, that's a unit that needs a lot of chemistry. So even if you were to bring in a whole bunch of guys, it would take them a couple of games to understand what they're passing off, all the different schemes and stuff that they're blocking, whatever. And if he's going to recruiting to get linemen in, besides guys like Will Campbell, Emory Jones, who are down there at LSU, anchoring one of the best lines, Zalance Hurd, guys like that, it's very difficult that true freshmen – it's very rare a true freshman offensive lineman come into a program and like change the program, right? So Deion's got an uphill battle.
Yes, it does.
Do you?
Which I think he recognizes.
Are you counting him out? Do you think Colorado will fail?
I think, well, they failed this season.
You think Colorado failed this season?
Well, as far, if we're talking about winning records and just like, listen, they've had some injuries, but I think the way they, after the way they won, not even the way they came into the season, it was the winning of the TCU game and on. Yeah, I think this season failed in a lot of different ways. Like, especially the Washington State game, it exposed them. Like, there seems to be like a lack of understanding of the rules, that quarterback situation. He threw it up twice.
I'll say this.
Okay,
shut up. Okay, shut up. All right, like, look. This is what I'll say. I think people aren't looking at the totality of it. And there's a part of it that they're not looking at. All the moving parts for Colorado to get better, there's one that they don't talk about, and that's Deion himself. Deion is still learning the ropes of coaching, particularly at that level. So not only will Colorado come back at some point and be a better team with different personnel, but he'll be a better coach. And I got to say, they got to coach better. They got to coach better. He's made some mistakes, not just in terms of on-the-field coaching, but he's made some mistakes in some of the things that he said during press conferences about his own team. All of those things they'll learn, and as they continue to learn, as he continues to learn, and as the program continues to learn itself and build its identity, I think that they'll be in a better spot. But it's a lot of people rooting for the Buffaloes to fail.
I
think that's kind of a thing that gets on me a little bit.
Yes, and I agree with you. This season, I'm saying, is done. I'm rooting for them the next season, and I do think that something like this needed to happen. I think the worst thing that could have happened for them was to win out. I think that it's a rebuilding year. They completely started over with a new team. There was so much to be done. They did better, but I think that they can – I absolutely think they can be better. And I do think that a lot, even though players are decommitting, I do think a lot of players will want to come because of the benefits – of playing for somebody like Deion Sanders.
And the NIL money you might be able to get.
No, for sure the NIL. That's part of the benefits I'm referring to.
Like, Shador is making like a shit ton of money.
Yeah, he's like top three.
Yeah,
he's right
so
up there with Bronny.
The NIL money and all of that stuff. And Deion could be a conduit to that. But I'll tell you this.
For sure.
Other teams in the Pac-12 and other teams in every conference, their way to stop the momentum of what they're doing is to beat the dog shit out of them. Colorado's games are so prominently featured now, and everybody watches them. So there's no such thing as a quiet 56-14 loss. It was Friday night. Everybody saw it. Everybody's watching Colorado, and that's a double-edged sword for them.
Do you think next year that they'll be so prominently displayed?
The games will be.
They are on Fridays, though.
So it's going to be every team's Super Bowl, and they're going to want to beat your brains in so that the momentum that you need is not going to be able to be maintained or sustained. All right, cool. Last thing, Carissa Thompson – who's a Fox and Amazon Prime sideline reporter, said that she made up sideline reports over there on Pardon My Take. Shout out to my guys,
PFT
and Big Cat. Yeah, I know them. Big Cat is a great guy. Audio.
I haven't been fired for saying it, but I'll say it again. I would make up the report sometimes because, A, the coach wouldn't come out at halftime, or it was too late, and I was like, I didn't want to screw up the report. So I was like, I'm just going to make this up because, first of all, no coach is going to get mad if I say, hey, we need to stop hurting ourselves. We need to be better on third down. We need to stop turning the ball
pressure
over.
The quarterback.
We need, yeah, exactly. and do a better job of getting off the field. Like, they're not going to correct me on that.
Right.
So I'm like, it's fine. I'll just make up the report.
Okay. People came out and were like, why the fuck did you tell us this? Why are you lying on the sidelines? So a lot of people were very upset about this.
Yeah. I mean, let me just be honest. I'm friendly with Carissa.
Jesus Christ.
But
before you even say this, let's go to the apology.
Go to the apology.
Jesus, can we get some kind of...
Well,
apology?
She wrote it. She didn't say it.
Okay, so this is her apology. When on a podcast this week, I said I would make up my reports... Early in my career when I worked as a sideline reporter before I transitioned to my current host role. Working in the media, I understand how important words are, and I chose the wrong words to describe the situation. I'm sorry. I've never lied about anything or been unethical during my time as a sports broadcaster. In the absence of a coach providing any information that could further my report, I would use information that I learned and saw during the first half to create my report. For example, if a team was 0 for 7 on third down, that would clearly be an area they need to improve on in the second half. In these instances, I never attributed anything said to a player or a coach. I have nothing but respect for the sideline reporters and the tireless work they put in behind the scenes, blah, 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 blah. I'm humbled, all that stuff.
Well, like, she contradicts herself, right? So she says that she would make up reports because she couldn't get the coach to talk or whatever information. So you made it up. That would be a lie. That would be something that is not true. So you can't say you didn't lie if you made it up. That's where I get a little confused. I mean, I do believe that she respects sideline reporters. I do believe she understands that her words were really, it's tough for women in the field of sports already. And it takes a lot to gain respect. So when you're saying you're doing this, it opens the door for people to harp on sideline reporters, particularly those that are women, and discredit them as legitimate reporters. So that's a problem with that, too. A lot of times people think only pretty women are allowed on the field because they don't have the football knowledge. And when you say something like this, it gives, you know, like, it makes that seem more true. So I don't understand. She's wrong in this. It's an apology, but it's not an apology. I think when she says, I understand what she's working in the media, I understand how important words are, and I chose wrong words to describe the situation. She's right, but I still don't understand why she's saying she never lied about anything. If you made it up, it's a lie. You might have been describing something that was true in regards to the game, but if the coach didn't tell you that they needed to improve on that, then what were you reporting on? Were you reporting on your observation, or were you saying, I talked to the coach? Because her statement to the Part of My Day guys makes it seem like she would say, the coach said this, because I think we cut that part out. She goes on to say, no coach would ever say that I was wrong for saying that.
Right.
So that means you were attributing that observation to a coach. That's a lie. So, I saw Jemele Hill and Carrie Champion, shout out to them, on Abby Phillips' show, shout out to her too. And they had really great takes as well. They both are friendly with Carissa too. They've worked with her in the past. And I think they summed it up best when they said, it's the way you said it and the entitlement behind it that makes it even more wrong. You said you wouldn't get fired from it because you've said it before and you already haven't been fired. In fact, you've been promoted. You're in studio now, which a lot of sideline reporters want to be in studio. You were rewarded for it. Not everybody is afforded that same privilege. And that's the other thing. That's the other side of it as well. So if I'm going to rate this apology, I'm going to give it a 2.
Okay.
At least I'm keep the same energy and I'm friendly with her.
I'm just saying, like, somebody needs to keep a tally of these apologies, because
I thought I did well with the 2.
You did. All right, before we get out of here, I want to say shout out to Anthony, man. Anthony is a guy, last night during the Lakers game, Monday night, he was shooting the half-court shot. And Donnie, I don't know if you saw this. Did you see this?
I saw
it. I did. It's sad and hilarious. Loved it.
Okay, Donnie, you know, this is the thing. I don't know if everybody saw this, but there's a half-court shot that goes on. You win $50,000. And this guy named Anthony, this is not funny.
I was laughing so hard.
Wait. This is not funny, man. Come on, man. Get it together. Come on, bro. This guy named Anthony, he shoots the half-court shot. Okay, he misses, and he almost immediately pops his Achilles. It's not funny. It's a serious injury. But if you watch the way it happened, God, Jesus, save my soul, please. last night, I swear to God, trying to be a good person. I was trying not to laugh at this situation. Y'all, this is not funny. Popping your Achilles is so serious. I'm wishing Anthony a speedy recovery.
It's the reaction to how he did it. It's not that he did it. It's the full. It's the way he stumbled.
Bro, this nigga knew he had popped his Achilles, and he tried to get up and like act like it was a cramp. And you see that you see everybody from the Lakers going, "Oh shit."
Because they're scared of a lawsuit. That's what they're scared of.
Bruh, Anthony had the wrong shoes on. Bruh, look, that's not funny.
He didn't even exert that much energy. I don't know how he popped that shot.
What you mean? We old.
Oof. Like, okay, Tony, stop.
What you mean? We old. We old. I relate to him. Tony, turn it off, bruh. It's really not funny. It's actually, look at them laughing in the control. It's really not funny. Like, he hurt himself. It's a very serious, it's obviously an Achilles.
Surely they'll cover the surgery costs.
The Lakers, I'm calling on the Lakers right now.
Cover the cost.
Cover the cost of this surgery.
Pay the copay, something.
Dr. Clapper should do this surgery. Dr. Clapper from the Lakers should do this surgery for Anthony, man. Anthony Achilles. We got to make sure that Anthony doesn't have to pay for this himself. That's so funny.
At least give him the money. The money, and that could pay for the surgery.
And look, it's like so many people, it's like.
Don't read Twitter comments. Are you about to read the comments?
It's like, that looks like an Achilles tear for somebody named Anthony at the Lakers game. It's just funny, bro. The court had to claim Anthony. It's just.
We gotta go. Did the players run over?
They run on the court. It's just funny. Take the caps off, but do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.